Hello, and welcome to episode 33 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We're here today with Elliot Fansteel, who is the president, the managing director,
CEO.
The CEO of Strathmore Music Center in North Bethesda, Maryland. How are you doing today, Elliot?
Very good.
Excellent. So the first question I'd like to ask you is, what are you currently doing, or what have you ever done, to advance the public interest, and why?
I like to think that that's pretty much been my life. Let me go backwards for a moment.
Sure.
So my father was the spokesman for Metro during the entire building of the subway system. And he spent most of his nights in people's living rooms telling them about this wonderful thing that would unify the region, that would be a great connector of people and jobs and places and the entire metro region. And he had this so that he could do it in his sleep. And occasionally he would take me with him. And I'd walk into this total stranger's living room, and he'd take off his coat, he'd roll up his sleeve, and he'd sit on the edge of the chair and talk to 5 people or 50 people. So that's how I was weaned. And it certainly at least took away any fear of speaking to strangers. But what was compelling, and I used to ask him about this, driving to these things, how did he do this? Because he's not the kind of guy that memorizes anything. In fact, he had a pack of 3x5 cards in his pocket all the time with the facts that he couldn't otherwise memorize. But he would say, if you talk from the heart, it just comes out. And if you listen to the people in the room, they'll tell you what they need to know.
So, Elliot, what does your heart tell you?
Well, my heart told me, first of all, that that arts was part of my life. My mother played the piano, my father played the violin, neither professionally, but both all their life. I was doing high school musicals because it turned out that boy dancers could get lots of girls. I had a decent set of rhythm, and not a lot of guys wanted to dance. And so I did all the musicals in high school and decided that I really liked dance, which was a strange thing for the late 60s. And at that point decided that sort of like I had the theater bug, you know, it bites you, the roar of the grease paint, smell of the crowd, that thing. And quickly decided that while I loved it, I was never going to be great at it. But did love helping the people that were very good at it get on a stage or get in front of a microphone or get in front of an audience. So I started to see my mission as the enablement of these. I like to think of musicians in particular as sort of angels on earth. If you look at a musician, a really talented one who's in their own world, they're not actually touching the ground. They're floating just above it. That's how angelic and just how elevated they are in terms of the world they live in. And I thought, what better thing in life than to be part of that? And if I can't be the musician, then let me be the guy that puts them on the stage or puts the paintbrush in their hand.
Interesting. So how did you find that that was your role? You said, I understand that you were in plays and, you know, you were good, but you weren't going to be world class. But how did it come to pass that you recognized that you had a role in facilitating transmission of the arts to the public?
So my Broadway musical career, which started back after Blair High School, graduated in 68, did all the musicals, I was discovered by a woman named June Allen, who was a British woman who had moved to Rockville and had started a theater program within the Rockville Recreation Department called Street 70. Literally, it was born in the streets, and it was the 70s. And they had, she had four artists, theater people, and they'd go onto playgrounds, and they'd get the kids together and say, let's do a play. And that grew into a whole series of programs because as the kids got older, she added more classes. Well, I hit her coming out of college, and I had actually gone to work for the Maryland State Department of Education for 2 years on a leadership JAG, which is another branch of life. But she said to me, why don't you come work for me as an arts administrator? And I said, oh, what? Now they actually have degrees in arts administration, but back in 1972, I was at GW University. I was not in an arts administration. I was a sociology major. She said, come work for me. And I said, well, what would I do? And she said, whatever it takes to put the theater, put the art in front of the people. Now, the beauty was that she had talked her way into the Recreation Department of Rockville. That director became the recreation director for Montgomery County. And it was in that transition to the county that she picked me up and said, come be my administrative person, because actually the truth is all she wanted to do was direct
Yeah.
And make lovely pronouncements with her English accent. The other thing about her was that she grew up in a land where, in England, the arts are supported by government. They just are. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows it. Everybody takes it for granted. And here she comes to Rockville, and she goes up, tells the Rockville City Council, you should support the arts. And they're going, why? And she said, well, in England, we all do. And she coined the phrase that, you know, where would the arts be without cathedrals? And so she knew sooner or later she needed to build a theater. And so Street 70 built the Roundhouse Theater and became the Roundhouse Theater. And that's where it all began. And I was the administrative person.
So I kind of have some basic questions right now. What is art and why is it important?
Fair question. And this is, of course, only my opinion. There are as many answers to that as you could hit on Google. I think art is the expression of the narrative of being human through many different disciplines, theater, music, visual arts, dance. How it comes out is up to the person's luck and their training and their talent. But it's still the story of the human experience. It is the thing that humans do perhaps uniquely. If dogs have them, they're just not sharing them. But people like to tell their story and hear the stories of others. And that, and how we do that in a creative manner, in one which uses as much metaphor as fact, in one that uses the heart as part of the amplification of the words, that's art. And so people that are good at that, people that understand that, people that connect with audiences are artists. Why is it important? Because I can't imagine my life or the life of my children or the life of this community without the arts. If you somehow magically pulled it out of everything, color goes away, design goes away, sound quality, sound goes away, poetry goes away, literature goes away, movies, TV, obviously, all of that goes away. I mean, that's not even a life worth living. But I don't think that would ever happen because man cannot not be expressive.
So how does your facilitation of the expression of the human story enhance your story?
I really like that word, facilitation. I really like it. Facilitation comes from the word facile, to make easy. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how I see my job. I used to explain back in the early days of Street 70, my job was to interpret to the county government and the purchasing department why when you buy a 2x4 for a set, it can be reused again and again, unlike in construction where once it's gone, it's gone. My job was to explain the art world to the political world and the political world to the art world, and I was the facile lubricant between the two, and I thought I could do that pretty well.
So you've spoken about your involvement in gaining fluency in art speak. How did you become fluent in the lingo and the world of politics? How did you enter that?
Well, while I was dancing in these musicals, I was a student council junkie. I mean, I was president of my senior class. I was president of my junior class. I was president of the Senate. I went to Maryland Leadership Workshops in the summer. I started teaching at Maryland Leadership Workshops. I became the president of Maryland Leadership Workshops, a 63-year-old organization, when it incorporated 40 years ago. I have gone back now and am there then, and I'm engineering the merger between MLW and Leadership Maryland. It's the other branch of my life. There's the arts, and there's this... It's really civic involvement more than politics, but it's how to engage people in joint decision-making on the quality of their own life, and that's how I look at politics, per se. I teach leadership training. I facilitate Leadership Maryland, Leadership Washington, Leadership Allegheny, Leadership Southern Maryland, Leadership Montgomery, and Leadership Eastern Shore. So those programs I do on an annual basis, and it's kind of like standing on a street corner in Times Square. Because I go in there and I do roughly the same orientation activity to get 50 people to know each other quickly in 2 days. Mm-hmm. And I stand there, and every year, this 30 to 50 people who are going to be important people walk right by me. And I get to stand still and just talk to them and meet them. And so it's been invaluable in my career in terms of getting to know people, to acquire resources, to know who to call when, to be efficient, to connect people. So it's been all of these pieces work together. None are really in a box. Leadership helps me in my arts business. My arts business, often I bring the leadership people here, and that's how I build an awareness of a huge place called Strathmore that someday will be built with public funding. It's all part of a whole fabric.
I see a common thread in your story of personalities, of human interest. I see you being interested in politicians, in artists. Regardless of your title, I feel like you want to meet people, and you just enjoy having an interaction with a unique human experience, which is each individual.
That's really well put. There's one other thing I'd put in there. I want to meet, I want to be with, I want to connect with people who are doing something, not just talking about it.
Why is doing important?
Because a lot of people talk. And very few are willing to sacrifice and put up with and be persistent until a product is produced. And for me, if there is no product, the rest is just extracurricular activity. So whether it's putting on a play or writing a musical or producing a series, a blues series like we're doing right now, or getting 12,000 fifth graders into my hall or on the leadership side, actually changing the way the state looks at its subdivisions and trying to draw them together in a massive program where Western Maryland meets Eastern Shore, meets Capital Region, and they talk to each other. If they're not doing something, then I'm not so interested. But it's amazing the number of people of goodwill who just haven't yet connected all the dots, but if they do, suddenly their dreams take on huge magnitude. They now find 12 people to help them do the program for homeless people who are fixing cars and having jobs and now being able to buy a home that they couldn't otherwise. Now you meet the people who are not just good shelter worker, but also want to do some kind of academic training for the kids who are coming up the ladder that can't even reach the bottom rung of the social ladder. I love the people that want to connect people to an outcome. And I'm very intolerant of those that just mark time.
And yet it costs so much for you, not in terms of money, although there's that, but there's time and there's energy and there's time not spent with your family and not spent doing something which, though this is enjoyable, could be different or more relaxing, for instance, on a Caribbean beach. Why give so much of yourself to benefit all these individuals who, when you set out, you don't even know?
In almost every case, I receive much more than I give. And my family will tell you that they wouldn't have me any other way. I have tried to be a laid-back, relaxing person. I go to Maine every summer for 2 weeks. By the end of the first week, I am ready to get out of the rocking chair, get off the porch, and get back to life. The classic definition of an extrovert is a person who refuels themselves. They're not the person on the table at the party with the lampshade on their head. They refuel themselves by being around other people. An introvert refuels themselves by being someone alone. I'm an extrovert by a few points on the Myers-Briggs, and so I do like being around people very much. It pumps me up. But I couldn't do that. I'm also fairly high on the introvert scale because I spend 2.5 hours virtually every morning alone at Panera. I open it at 6 o'clock in the morning, the one over behind the Jewish Community Center. I have my coffee. I have my Washington Post. I do my emails, I think. Occasionally I meet with somebody, but I try not to. So that at about 8:30, I can get in my car, and in 5 minutes, with no rush hour to speak of, I'm at work. That centers me for the day. Then my entire day is with people. I mean, it's meeting, or speech. Yesterday, I did a workshop at the Johns Hopkins University for the Joint Technology Venture Program. And it was on leadership skills and some other team building. They had 54 people they wanted to sort of mold. So for 3 hours, I did that. I came back here, and that afternoon, I had a very large meeting about the East County Initiative, which is my absolute heartthrob. We're going to take Strathmore's best assets, go to the East County, that's 29 Corridor, right, where there are many talented people, virtually no facilities, and very little assets to do arts programs. And I'm going to take the best of us over there, raise up what exists over there, and we're going to make East County an arts-rich place. I love that. I just love that. I've got church choirs. I've got Latin dance competitions. I've got a step Africa program. I can take step dance into the schools. I've got 93 people in an East County string orchestra that didn't even exist a year ago. I mean, we're just having unbelievable success over there because they're so hungry and they want it so bad. and it's productive. It's not just talking about it, it's doing it.
So I just need to make a comment for our listeners right now who aren't familiar with Montgomery County. The eastern portion tends to have less wealth than the western portion, and also tends to be demographically more diverse. So he mentioned West African, he mentioned Latino, Hispanic. Those populations tend to live on the East County and tend to have fewer resources, and therefore he's excited about the program bringing resources and funds for the arts to the East County.
So let's take a simple children's chorus. That seems like an easy thing to start.
Mm-hmm.
Well, over here in the West County, which is just the opposite of everything you just said, where there's much more wealth, much more density, much more corporate support, parents drive, you hang out a little sign saying, children's chorus starting today. 16 SUVs drive up, and the kids are all well-dressed, well-prepared, tuition money in their pocket, and their parents will promise to get them there every day on time. Do the same thing in certain places in the East County, and I don't want to characterize everybody that way.
Right.
First of all, did anybody bother to see the sign? No, they're not even looking because their lives are so busy. Many of them are doing dual income, single parent households. There are latchkey kid issues. There's very little time or transportation to get the kid to the thing. When they go home, there's literally no place to practice. There might be four kids at home, and it's too darn loud.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't even gotten in the door to the first activity.
Yeah.
I call them threshold issues. So in East County, you may have five threshold issues before you get to the first note of the instrument.
Uh-huh.
In the Western County, you just jump right over it and boom, there you go. In the end, I still get a string orchestra on either way, I still get a chorus, I still get a theater, but the thresholds you must plan for and overcome in East County are just so much greater.
Huh.
So, recreation department, school system, churches, any institution over there, they heard we were coming over and they opened their arms and said, come, whatever you want to do, we'll help you do it. And I have generally free space. I've got some free transportation. I've got teachers who put out their time and effort and volunteers. It's just the most heartwarming thing I've done since we moved here.
So I want to segue back to something you mentioned just a few moments ago when you mentioned you're an extrovert. How does being an extrovert play into your decision to pursue public service?
I do think politicians and actors are not far apart. They both know and enjoy and play to an audience. They feed off of it and they play to it. I think it's very hard for an introvert to step up and be a public official who has to face the public very much. Not impossible, but it certainly must take a toll. I think the extroversion of wanting to connect with people, wanting to spread the message and grow the crop is a natural extrovert tendency, as opposed to perhaps a more introverted person. You might want to focus on a problem, do the research, solve the problem relatively independently, and then tell a few people. So I just live in a bigger world, a bigger arena than that, exhausting as it may be.
Interesting how personality plays such a role in the path one chooses in life.
I think it absolutely does. Where do you get it? I know your parents, for instance. Extraordinary people. Are you them? Do you come from them? My dad was a very public guy. My mother was a very private lady. She was a piano teacher. Quite the opposite. Of the three children of us, I got the extroversion gene. My sister is the Phi Beta Kappa brilliant, quiet introvert.
Mm-hmm.
And my other sister is, I would say, oblivious to both.
So let me ask a little bit about place.
Yep.
You mentioned that you grew up in Montgomery County.
Coma Park.
We're still living in Montgomery County. You are the CEO of one of the preeminent arts facilities, the preeminent arts facility in Montgomery County. You have initiatives in East County. You speak about West County. To you, Montgomery County is almost an identity. It's very important and central to your career, your interests, and what motivates you. Why?
Because I've had the luxury of staying here. Aside from 2 short years in Illinois at college, I came back here. This has been and is my home. I mean, I've got 60-plus years of knowledge of watching people. I know where a lot of bodies are buried. I've watched virtually all the news stuff go through. Cycles happen. I know it. I feel it. I love it. I will say, though, this is a tough county to feel an affinity to. There was an old slogan, I think it was back almost in, maybe it was Gilchrist days, making the county a community. And we used to laugh at it. I mean, that was our real stretch, because nobody thought this county was a community. Silver Spring might be.
For our listeners, Gilchrist was a Montgomery County executive
many years back. But the idea that we were of any kind of a unified thing, what happens is, and of course if you move away from here for 10 minutes and people say, where are you from? You don't say Montgomery County, you say Washington.
Uh-huh.
So we even live under this shadow of Washington, not of Montgomery.
So what does community mean?
Well, I think community starts when common interests are required to achieve a common goal. And the problem with a sprawl community is that there is no center to it. There's no heartthrob. There's no cause for which we are united. Now, I will say that in my life here, I mean, Rockville was just a speck on the map, but now it's a real place. Gaithersburg, Silver Spring has been through several renovations. Tacoma Park just
Tacoma
there
Park
it is.
Has
Tacoma
an
Park.
Identity.
Oh, it absolutely does. It's had one for a long time. I don't know that it's changed a whole lot, and I don't think you'll ever see massive development taken over Tacoma Park. And if you did, they would probably, you know, ask you to leave, because mm-hmm. they don't like that. But then there's, you know, there's Wheaton that is under constant redevelopment. There's, within the county, there are communities. I am fortunate enough with this art center mm-hmm. that serves almost 1 million people in Montgomery County alone to have a sense of a larger community than most people are able to see. But I believe that it's there.
And what is the community? Would you define it as the arts community? Would you define it as a community tied to place? Is there? Can you have community that is not geographically bound?
Mm. There are certainly communities within community. And with increasing diversity now, there are very definite communities. I mean, there's an Indian community. There are various Asian subset communities. Mm-hmm. Hispanic is a useless word. You have to go into each of the nationalities to get down to the community that is there, and those exist. I, however, would characterize Montgomery County's community as a place that is very proud of its, of what it has achieved to be here. Most people that came here had climbed up a ladder to land here. They targeted, they aimed here. They didn't just trip on us. And then most of them aren't really passing through. I think that those who have come here have built a quality of life they're proud of. They have a school system second almost to none. They have a political system that, as they go, is probably one of the cleanest in the nation. They have a master plan that if you were to hold up your hand with the five fingers, all of your fingers are parkland and the space between them are transit corridors, and that's what it was supposed to be. It actually came true. Or as Bruce Adams likes to say, we finally have hit the million-person master plan we were built to be.
Bruce Adams is a former council member and currently is in charge as community cultural ombudsman.
So essentially, we dreamed it and it came true. And it is still growing, although I think its rate is slowing a little bit relative to 10 years ago. But there is a sense of there now.
Interesting.
It is not a vacuum and it is not a faceless urban sprawl. And I think it has a wonderful future. Of all the places in the country, I'm so happy I raised my kids here. And whether they know it or not, they'll look back and say, wow, were we lucky to be there.
So we're nearing the end of the podcast. And as we do so, I'd like to ask you to reflect on all of your years of service, both through civic engagement and through promoting the arts. What does it mean? Why have you done it? Why have you made sacrifices to make it happen? Talk to me a little bit about the meaning that all of this public service has given you.
Well, that's a tall order. I have been very fortunate to be given challenges that I had enough resources and enough relationships to bring to fruition. And here's a small list. It was my job to start the Montgomery County Arts Council, and I did it when I was in the mansion up the hill, and that has now grown and prospered. Start the Roundhouse Theater. That has grown and prospered into the Roundhouse Theater. Street 70, the Roundhouse Theater. Strathmore was a mansion, and now it's a 2,000-seat concert hall, and now it's a program that goes countywide. Maryland Leadership Workshops was a tiny little summer 1 week on a campus training 50 kids, and it's now got over 300 kids 3 weeks on a college campus, and it's merging with Leadership Maryland. Leadership Maryland, I've been with it for 27 years. It started out as a test program to see if there was a community in Maryland. That's an even bigger stretch. And sure enough, there was, and sure enough, they want to know about each other, and that is now one of the best programs in the country. So I'm very happy to look back and say, all of those horses I bet on, and in not in total, but in part due to my unique contribution, extroverted as it may have been, have achieved their destiny. And they will go on. I mean, this is not the end by any means. But I look back and I say, yeah, there were certainly mistakes along the way, and fortunately many of them have been buried and will never be resurrected. But the successes are really heartwarming. And all of them had to do with people then picking up the gauntlet and going ahead beyond anything that I had done. And that's horribly satisfying. And my kids, my son came to an event last week that we had for Strathmore, and he apparently spent some time watching me on stage doing what I do. And I only know this because my wife told me later. He was very proud of his father. He was very proud of the accomplishments, AMP, the nightclub that we had built. He was very proud of the fact that that actually was something we talked about 5 years ago, and there he was sitting in it. That gives me great pride to see that, you know, change is possible if you connect the right dots and get out of the way of the creative people and let them do what their instincts say.
So that has been Elliot Fansteel, CEO of Strathmore, who speaks of legacy and in an oblique way touches upon man's mortality and that his efforts to promote causes he believes in, to build communities that last beyond him, is something that's quite fulfilling as he seeks to build successful endeavors that will go out, continue beyond him. He is able to give beyond himself. And through that perpetuity, by being able to continue to give in new ways to more people, Elliot is able to find meaning through public service. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been episode 33 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.